Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday morning, the 15th of May. This hour of the program, we'll be talking about the Justice Department's secretly obtaining 2 months of telephone records of reporters and editors for the Associated Press. The AP president and CEO, Gary Pruitt, said there can be no possible justification for such an overbroad collection of the telephone communications of the AP and its reporters. These records potentially reveal communications with confidential sources across all of the news gathering activities undertaken by the AP during that period, provide a roadmap to AP's news gathering operations, and disclose information about AP's activities and operations that the government has no conceivable right to know. Eric Holder, at a news conference yesterday, said that this concerned a leak that was a very serious leak, and it put the American people at risk. But evidently, the administration did not inform the Associated Press in advance that they were doing this. What used to be procedures that the press and government would follow in dealing with stories that may be of a sensitive nature, that may be in the best interest, and when would it be in the best interest to not have a story printed? Eric Holder will be facing interrogation from people in the House Judiciary Committee today, and this will obviously be a story that will be investigated for quite some time. So we thought we would start investigating it this hour of the program, and we will have two guests with us during the first hour of the show. We'll be welcoming your phone calls, as we always do, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Mark Jerkowitz will be joining us at the top of the hour. He is Associate Director of the Pew Research Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism. And later this hour, Edward Allwood, who's Professor of Journalism, School of Communications at Quinnipiac University. Mark, as I said, is Associate Director of the Pew Research Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism. He spent 20 years covering the news media, was press critic and author of the Boston Phoenix's Don't Quote Me column, spent 10 years at the Boston Globe, has taught a course on media ethics at Northeastern and Tufts University, and is a commentator on media-related issues. Mark, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Kathleen. Good to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. There's a lot to sort out in this story. Tell me, are there sort of steadfast rules that the press and government have dealt with for many years, and this is a break from those kinds of rules? Or is this part of a continuing kind of pattern of conflict between the press and government?
I think this is part of a continuing pattern of conflict, often between the government and press, basically over one key and significant issue, and that's the protection of confidential sources. I can take your listeners through, you know, some of the ways that struggle has manifested itself in the past. I think we can all remember Judith Miller of the New York Times,
yes,
spending a couple of months in jail for refusing to reveal her sources in the Valerie Plame case. I think you may remember that reporters for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution refused to reveal their confidential sources in the case involving Richard Jewell, the man who was sort of wrongly intimated to be the Atlanta Olympic bomber and who a number of leaks and stories surfaced about. We can take this all the way back to the famous Pentagon Papers, where the Nixon administration attempted to enjoin the Washington Post, the New York Times, and other publications from publishing, obviously, the documents that had been leaked by Daniel Ellsberg. In local cases, we've often seen, in local crime, the criminal investigations, we've often seen reporters who have been willing to go to jail or risk contempt citations for refusing to reveal their confidential sources. So the issue of the contract that a journalist makes with a confidential source and the interest of a government or governmental entity in finding out who that source is, often in the course of a broader investigation, that's not targeting the news media. That isn't usually the case, and that's not the case here, is an ongoing struggle. some of that struggle, you know, in many states, we do have a kind of a shield law that can protect to some degree journalists from having to testify about their confidential sources, but we don't have a federal law, and the law varies widely. So this is part of a bigger struggle. It's another manifestation. I think the reason that this perhaps has generated as much of an outcry as it has from a number of media institutions is the degree. In other words, the scope of the material that was gathered by the government here, and the secrecy of it, and that meaning that there was, you know, that the AP learned about it after these records were obtained and not before. So I think some people see a sort of a qualitative difference in methods here, but it is another chapter of a long, you know, an unresolved struggle between journalists and the government.
Is it just a matter of courtesy that the administration would say to an organization, hey, this is a matter of national security, hold off on the story? Is it a series of recommendations that came about as a result of Watergate? I mean, what's printed here that you should follow, and what's just a matter of, well, we're going to do the right thing and let you know why we're concerned?
Well, you know, each case obviously takes on its own context and content. And, you know, we should remember that these records were seized as part of what it apparently is a grand jury investigation into leaks on you know, national security matters. And we, at least it's been reported that this story that the AP had written that gained everybody's attention seemed to have been about a CIA effort and a successful effort to foil an al-Qaeda type attempt. It should be remembered that this investigation into those leaks started because, frankly, there was an outcry in Washington, people on both parties, that there was too much information, national security information, getting out via leaks. What usually happens with the government, and it's also clear in this story that the government did ask the AP to hold the story for a couple of days, which they did, and that's not uncommon. The government obviously doesn't have the right to essentially censor what a publication is going to do. So traditionally, what we've seen is, and this was the case, you know, in the issue of the warrantless wiretap story by the New York Times, and it was most famously the case in the New York Times decision not to publish what they knew about the Bay of Pigs invasion in Cuba. The government sort of has this sense of moral suasion where they can go to journalists and news organizations and say, please, if you publish this now, it will put Americans in harm's way. That's not a legal argument. It's kind of a moral argument, and in many cases, news organizations, not always, will agree to either delay or not include all the information they have. That's generally, the way this relationship works. And it should be noted that, you know, in this case, the AP did delay the story for a couple of days, but then obviously published it.
Yeah. Eric Holder seemed not to be able to answer the question yesterday. He went on quite a bit about how this was a huge national security issue. He ranked him the number one or two national security issues that he's ever seen. And yet he didn't answer the question of how the leak put the American people at risk. Was he under some obligation to answer that question?
Well, I think, put it this way, I think there's an expectation that given the scope of what the government, you know, took from AP and the extensive number of records, and I can understand why the AP is concerned about it, there has to be some explanation from the government as to why this particular investigation and this story, you know, represented a significant national security issue. Now, having said, and I assume he's going to be, you know, as we speak, he's going to be asked a lot about that today, and we may know a lot more after he testifies on the Hill today about that. So having said that, you know, it's by definition, we're talking about, you know, sensitive national security information. So I think, you know, in a sort of political and public opinion sense, it would behoove him to somehow try and convince the American people that the gravity of the issue required this kind of scrutiny of the AP records, while he may very well say that to go into real detail about it would continue to jeopardize ongoing operations in the war against terror and that sort of thing. So he may have the job of trying to walk a fine line between, making public the kind of national security information that they don't want to make public, and yet somehow convincing at least the journalism industry that this was to some degree justified and the unusual steps were justified. As to the general public, it's interesting. I'll be very interested to know how closely they're paying attention to this, because we've often seen cross currents in public opinion on this. There's been some polling, not a lot, but we've often, when you ask people, should journalists have the right to protect confidential sources, they generally endorse that idea. But for example, in the Judy Miller case, there was a question about was the government, should Judy Miller have gone to jail for failing to disclose her sources, and a majority of people thought so. So, I'd be very interested to know whether the general public sort of sees this as kind of an arcane media ethics issue, whether they tend to default on the side of, hey, national security comes before, a newspaper's mm-hmm. right to unfettered reporting. That'll be an interesting aspect of this story.
Yeah, well, let's ask our audience that, too. Our phone number, we'll find out if we get phone calls on the issue or if this is a press concern issue. But it should be an issue that's of concern because a free and unfettered press and a press that really does its job is one of the cornerstones of American democracy. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Is this a story that you are paying attention to? Are you concerned about what would appear to be a government overreach in getting the records of 100 AP reporters and editors concerning a leak that had to do, as Mark was saying, of this story of the CIA thwarting an act of terrorism that was supposedly to happen with an airplane having a bomb on it. And what happened was the AP didn't know that all these records, it was all done secretly, were taking all of these records. And what do you think about all of that, Eric? And, of course, there are political implications to this as well. We'll ask our guests if they think Eric Holder's job really is on the line because of this and the other problems that he's facing. It's been quite a week for the Obama administration, the IRS issue as well. Our phone number again, 800-486-8655, and we'll start taking phone calls in a moment. Mark Jerkowitz is our first guest, Associate Director of the Pew Research Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to phone calls. Linda in La Crosse, our first caller. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thank you for the show at this time. I'm concerned because national security, quote unquote, is a cover for leaving the people of the United States out and uninformed. And I was telling the screener that the last 2 days on the BBC at night, one of the lead stories has been about a rebel commander in Syria who was filmed cutting out the heart and liver of, I know it's very grisly, of a government soldier and eating them.
Ugh.
And he has been named. The Human Rights Watch recognized who this was, and they named him. And, this was a lead story, especially night before last on the BBC. And yet you hear nothing about that in this country. I suspect that they say this film has gone viral in Europe, but we want to send arms, like Senator McCain wants to arm the Syrian rebels. And so the American people are essentially being kept in the dark.
Mark?
Well, I think that's a slightly different issue. I mean, I've seen, and I haven't looked at the video, but I know there's access to the video. I'm not suggesting that I don't think this is the same kind of thing where the American government would go to journalism organizations and say something like, don't show the brutalities being done by the Syrian rebels because we're considering arming them, and we don't want to, frankly, diminish support for it. I'm not sure how much support there is in the first place. To some degree, I think it involves, you know, the lack of overall coverage of Syria in this country. And then, you know, there are, rightly or wrongly, there's always been this sort of practice in American journalism that the most grisly images from war aren't conveyed. Now, that is something that I think is frankly important to know. I do think it's different, for example, than when Donald Rumsfeld, as Secretary of Defense, you know, asked American, when the Defense Department, you know, and the administration asked American journalists not to, for example, broadcast the Bin Laden videos that were coming out of Al Jazeera or things like that. So in that particular case, I wouldn't be so Machiavellian as to think that particular issue is part of a government cover-up to keep support for arming the Syrian rebels high. I just think, to some degree, that has more to do with sort of standards and practices, rightly or wrongly, and sometimes we can be too squeamish about what the American media shows the public in wartime.
Mark, did there used to be a time when, if there were a dispute like this, the AP or some news organization had a story, they had a confidential source, it shed right. important information on the workings of government, be it in war, peace, or taxes, or whatever. The government says, don't run this story, or they're investigating the leak. There used to be a time when the dispute could be taken to some kind of court, and the court would decide what was right here.
Well, ultimately, there could be litigation that stems. This is always an issue that can ultimately be resolved in the courts, as the Pentagon Papers case was. So it's quite conceivable that, and I don't know that it would happen, that the AP could file litigation against, you know, the Justice Department and essentially, you know, get all their records back and make sure that the Justice Department, you know, no longer had copies of anything that you know. So yes, at some point these kind of disputes, which, you know, at the first level tend to obviously be between the government and the journalistic organization, they can get to a legal level. And frankly, in many cases, you know, I mean, obviously in the Judith Miller case, you know, that got to a legal level. So there often the courts intervene in the cases of news organizations trying to protect confidential sources. It hasn't happened yet here, but it could conceivably happen. You know, one of the most interesting cases along those lines, people may remember, involved a nuclear scientist by the name of Wen-Ho Lee.
Right, I remember him.
Who, you know, was ultimately charged with something like 55 counts and convicted of only one in the government's case, essentially as against him as sort of as a spy. You know, in a nuclear facility, pretty much fizzled. But, you know, interestingly enough, during the course of the reporting around that, obviously there were a number of stories in the media that at least portrayed Wen-Ho Lee in a negative light. When the prosecution against him basically collapsed, he ended up suing the government. And as part of the discovery and you know, in that particular case, he subpoenaed, his lawyer subpoenaed, I think it was four different reporters, to find out who had been leaking negative information about him in the press accounts around, you know, that particular case. And in that case, though, you know, that case went to a judge, and this was in a civil case, and the four reporters were held in contempt. And that wasn't even a criminal case, and it was actually a private litigant, not the government. So there often is ultimately, there could be a legal resolution of this case. For now, it's kind of being fought in the court of public opinion.
Yeah. Well, we'll go back to phone calls in a moment. If I were a reporter for AP, and AP is a pretty solid, middle-of-the-road kind of news organization, so many people count on stories from AP, and I didn't know what was being targeted, and as far as I can tell, they don't know. It could have been my emails. They could have eavesdropped. They say they didn't, but they could have eavesdropped on many of my conversations. This would make me a little upset. Wouldn't you be upset?
Yes. And I, you know, first of all, the AP is, you know, a well-respected organization. And frankly, it's a very important organization, particularly at a time when other reporting resources have diminished. And, you know, and if you look at the language, you alluded to it earlier, in Gary Pruitt's letter to Attorney General Holder, I think you get a sense of sort of the outrage and shock there is at that organization.
Yes.
And I think you're exactly, yeah, if I was one of those reporters, I would be plenty upset and anxious right now, no doubt about it. Now, you know, what the government does with those records, and I think that's part of the concern here, is, you know, they sort of went fishing, you know, for a minnow or whatever you might call it, with a giant net, and they swooped up a lot of stuff that's probably could well not be germane to the investigation, and I think that's causing anxiety.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks, Linda, for the call. Irv in Minocqua. Hi.
Hi. I have two concerns. One is that there's oftentimes in these kinds of cases such a rush to judgment without getting good information. I've had several conversations with people in my area in my experience, and they have no clue as to what the leak was, and therefore have no idea what the foundation of the story and why the government's concerned. We're not being very well informed. I still don't know exactly what the leak was and how that in some way may have impacted security. And the second issue, it seems to me, is that there's a certain hypocrisy that's going on with Republican legislators, McConnell in particular, who are just going apoplexic about this. When during the Bush administration, whenever there were leaks that negatively affected the Republican side of issues, they were just going nuts crazy about the press carrying these stories. There's just got to be a better balance, and we're in such a politicized environment that they're like sharks. They're smelling blood in the water.
You know, that's a really interesting point, and I would say this. I mean, we know now that this issue is, you know, now in the political grinder in Washington, D.C., and it's obviously there's a very substantive issue about the First Amendment and freedom of the press, and now there's a political, you know, issue about scandals in Washington, and to the degree that it gets politicized, and that's the way the story is reported. The political part of this story, then the public will be less well informed about the core issues. And I say this, and I mean this earnestly, I'm not trying to be sarcastic. You know, at various times, the news media in this country often comes under attack, for its role from various politicians. And again, let's not forget that the ideology of this grand jury was complaints about national security leaks that were showing up in newspapers. You know, so given the fact that many politicians of different parties and for different reasons often see the media as attacking the media as a good way to score political points, it's somewhat refreshing, whatever the context, to now hear so many people affirming the importance of a free press in this country and First Amendment rights. So I'm not sure there's irony there, but if you're a supporter of the media, that's something positive you can take away from it.
And there are a lot of things, and I guess we won't know unless people start talking about this, that don't make a lot of sense here. If indeed this was the story, or maybe there was more, I don't know, but nobody's saying what it is. Are we supposed to know? If it was a thwarted bomb plot, then you would think that the administration would want to take some credit for that. Hey, we thwarted an act of terrorism.
To the extent that I've read about it, I think what they're concerned about is that whoever was leaking information about that might have potentially put other operations or other. Remember, this was an embedded, as far as I understand, this was, you know, someone who managed to infiltrate a terrorist organization. That's how that plot was foiled.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what they're concerned about is that, you know, the war on terror is an ongoing element, that it's not simply a one-off and it worked out well, so what, but that there are operatives in the field, that there are resources, that there are ongoing investigations, that the same people who leaked this information might have information about that could jeopardize other counterterrorism activities. So I think I wouldn't be surprised, obviously, if that's something that Attorney General Holder says. And I think that might be an area of, you know, what was sort of piquing the government's concern here.
Well, why didn't he say it yesterday?
Well, you know, I think that's a very good question. I have seen some allusions to that in stories. I think that they were very much on the defensive yesterday. And again, you know, I would assume we'll get a fuller explanation today and we'll get a sense of whether or not, you know, the Attorney General is going to stick to talking points that basically say, hey, that we had to do this. We can't tell you a lot about it. Trust us, or give us more genuine insight into what was going on here.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark, very much. You were most informative.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Kathleen.
Mark Turkowitz, Associate Director of the Pew Research Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism, and he spent 20 years covering the news media. He was a press critic and author of the Boston Phoenix Don't Quote Me column. He was at the Boston Globe for 10 years and has taught a course on media ethics at Northeastern and also at Tufts Universities. We continue our conversation about this issue, just changing our guests and welcoming more of your phone calls as well. We have lines for you at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Is this a story that's of deep concern to you? Would you like to get to the bottom of this? Or is it something that's kind of off the radar and there are other stories that you're following much more closely? The press hasn't been held in very high esteem for a number of years now, so maybe people are saying, what the heck, so what? And yet those people who are in the press realize, I think, the importance of this story and the importance of their being able to do their jobs. Edward Allwood is professor of journalism at the School of Communication at Quinnipiac University, worked as a TV news reporter in Virginia, Washington, and CNN, author of Straight News, Gays and Lesbians in the News Media, and Dark Days in the Newsroom, McCarthyism Aimed at the Press. He is with us now, and we'll continue our conversation. Edward, thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you.
Yeah. Let me ask you, this obviously is a story that resonates among people who do newspaper work and radio work and television work, people who are in the press. Do you think that this story resonates? And if it does, why? If it doesn't, shouldn't it resonate with the American public? Is it a big deal?
Well, it should, but it's up to the press to inform the public of why they should care about it. And I think they're doing a good job of that. You know, I'm old enough to remember the Pentagon Papers episode, and I don't think people in the beginning of that quite realize the significance of it either.
Mm-hmm. Well, refresh our memory. There will be people listening who don't remember the Pentagon Papers.
Well, the Pentagon Papers had to do with Daniel Ellsberg, who was a employee of the RAND Corporation. And Ellsberg decided that the information he was seeing, which was secret, was not matching what the administration was putting out as the background of the Vietnam War, the Nixon administration. And so he decided that he was going to leak the information so that the American people would get the full story. And then, of course, some restraining orders came out against the newspapers, the two main newspapers, the New York Times and the Washington Post. Ellsberg was arrested and charged, and then to top it all off, in trying to prosecute him, the Nixon administration broke into and seized records from Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, the case was thrown out.
Yeah. What kinds of answers do we need from Eric Holder? He's going to have a hearing today in front of the Judiciary Committee, C-SPAN 3 at noon today, I believe, noon Central Time. What does he need to answer? What kinds of questions does he need to answer? He didn't say very much yesterday at all.
Well, to put on my journalist's hat for a minute.
Sure.
The thing that fascinates me in all of this is Holder said that he recused himself because he had been interviewed about this case.
Right.
Now, what I want to know is, has somebody suspected him of being the leaker to AP?
I know. And why would they suspect him of being the leaker?
And why would they interview him?
Right.
That's the most curious part of this. And the thing that's disturbing about that is that the Attorney General's approval to go after a media organization is required under the guidelines of the Justice Department. Now, for him to recuse himself, in a sense, seems like shirking a responsibility to me.
Mm-hmm. What are the guidelines from the Justice Department when it comes to going after news operations? They really went after AP. Do they have guidelines that say that they can do that?
Well, they have guidelines that say that they have to exhaust all other avenues, which they claim they did, which also brings up the question about what's going on here, because it looks to me like their investigation of the leak was going nowhere and out of desperation turned to these telephone logs, which, by the way, were logs that is records of calls. They were not the content of calls. So they're using a shotgun approach to try to figure out who the leaker was.
Do we know that it wasn't the content or not? Do we know
yes.
that? We do know that.
Yes. That's the information that I have, that they had gotten. It was not described so far, at least, as wiretapping or bugging. It was described as getting records of phone calls to these, I've forgotten how many phone calls, in and out phone calls from quite a number of phones, 20 separate phone lines.
Mm-hmm. And maybe as many as 100 reporters. But do we know?
That's a weird figure because I've been looking up. They've got 100 people in the Washington Bureau alone.
Uh-huh.
And they have the records from New York, Washington, and Hartford, Connecticut, and... This is also interesting, that the main number for AP reporters in the House of Representatives press gallery.
Right.
So it's got to be far more than 100.
Yeah. And do we know the extent of their, what some have called, overreach here? Do we know for a fact that they didn't go into the emails of these reporters?
Well, we don't know that yet. But I think everybody, in a sense, is wondering if another shoe will drop.
Right.
Because if I could play out an imaginary scenario here, if they do identify someone as suspicious that's been talking to AP reporters on certain dates at certain times, then in theory they would go after this person and ask them about it, and they would probably deny it. Then the recourse would be to subpoena the reporter and ask the reporter under oath if that person... the suspect was the leaker. Well, that gets us into really touchy ground that we've been in before with Matt Cooper, one of the most recent with Time Magazine and that sort of thing. So this could be a very slippery slope.
And the other question that I had is when Eric Holder talks about this being such a huge matter of national security that it was, you know, way up there, number one, number two, an issue of vast, vast importance. And then when you hear what the story is, you know, it's we don't understand why it was of vast importance here. So the question is, I guess, have we determined what information a government, a Justice Department can withhold from the American public? What really is national security? What would hurt American people? And what is just government overreach?
Well, that's the big bugaboo with the Freedom of Information Act, which, by the way, resulted from the Watergate burglaries when Congress passed the FOIA. But there is this catch-all where documents of national security are exempt. Let me give you an example from my own work. I do research as a professor on Cold War issues, and especially having to do with... Eastern Europe. And I did research on a reporter from 1950 who was taken into custody in Czechoslovakia and tortured in their prison. And so I asked for the CIA documents on this. This was 2 years ago. And my request for documents on that case from 1950 was turned down because of national security reasons.
Really?
Now, all of those people are dead. The country I'm talking about doesn't even exist anymore.
Oh, my.
It's very, very hard to see how my request for these documents would be an issue of national security.
And what do they say to you, Professor Allwood? Sorry, Professor, you can't have them?
That's right.
That's it.
And then they give you the citation of the law, and that citation takes you to the cover for national security interests.
Wow. Let's go to phone calls and emails and that kind of thing. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Mike in Appleton, hi.
Yeah, good morning. So as a consumer of news, I'm just flabbergasted by, so much seems to be happening all at the same time. You have Benghazi, you got the IRS, now the AP. And so I come away with two things. One, I get the impression that the Obama administration, you know, everybody says, oh, no, not me, it was, you know, it was somebody else. It's that sensation that nobody wants to take responsibility for anything. And then I have to ask myself, because, you know, one really doesn't have the time to listen to all of this. You know, I mean, there's just too much. But one also comes away with a sense of, well, I mean, is there something else going on here? Is this pointing to something else?
Like what? What are you implicating?
Well, I mean, you know, it's an awful lot of things to be going on. Is there some real responsibility here of the Obama administration in these things?
Okay. Professor Allwood.
I understand exactly what the caller is asking about. There is a real sensitivity within the Obama administration that has been caused by criticism of the administration's response to terrorism. And so the Obama administration has, as best it can, under not releasing national security information, tried to defend itself and make a case that it is on top of terrorists and cyber threats. This administration, as you may know, has brought 6 cases against people suspected of leaking classified information, and that's more than under all the previous presidents combined. So the question here, and I think what your caller is getting at, is there an oversensitivity here? Is the administration overreacting in trying to prove to its critics that it's on top of things?
Mm-hmm. And is the other side overreacting and accusing the president of not being on top of these issues? Because, you know, in many ways, he has critics on the left who say he's doing too much.
Well, yes. And that for me, is one of the real ironies of all of this. Up until this AP uproar, we have rarely seen the Republicans and Democrats agree on anything.
Right. Yeah, right. Mike, thanks very much for your call. Lines open for you if you'd like to join us, 800-486-8655. Joe in Fox Point, we've covered some of this, but Joe may ask things here that we haven't completely talked about. Could you clarify, please, what kinds of information the government got from the AP records? I heard they did not get detailed content, that is, verbatim transcripts of recordings of emails of communications between the AP person and a source. Rather, I think they just got the name of the AP person, the name of the source, and the time and duration of the communication. To me, this latter scenario is much less troubling than the first.
Yes, that's right. And I completely agree. The problem is, we don't know where this leads. The problem is that all of that creates an uncertainty that affects how reporters do their work, but more importantly, affects how people who cooperate with the press to help the press do their job of keeping watch on the powers of government. The question is how it affects them. This is very much like having, I think, in my mind, the type of intimidation that you have when pickets picket a company. And then customers don't want to go in to do business with the company.
Mm-hmm.
Or finding a police car with police sitting in it, staring at the front door of your office. People are reluctant to go into your office. They don't know what's going on. There's an uncertainty surrounding it. So that's part of the big problem is we don't know where this is leading, and it's creating a lot of uncertainty.
Yes. Brian in Fond du Lac. Hello, Brian.
Hey, how are you doing this morning?
All right, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing just fantastic.
Good.
On a wonderful day here in Wisconsin.
All right.
Hey, I got an interesting insight that came up. The IRS issue has been known since 2011. This business about trying to seal government leaks is quite evidently a longstanding issue, varying from both Republican and Democrat incumbencies responding and sometimes overreacting in the case. But I have a different insight on this in a way, in that the Republican base at this point has a real feel for the concept. They think that they can predictably find the Obama administration on the run. Yeah, they have very skillfully played a lot of issues that have been longstanding issues in the time and the proper place. The objective here is a broader one, I think, and it's to defeat the immigration bill. Because basically what they have is a lot of fireworks now to be able to call into question again. Fox News this morning was raising the issue that because of the IRS problems, Obamacare could never be enforced unless eliminated immediately, and want to bring up another vote within the next 2 weeks on banning Obamacare. I'll take my response off the air.
Thanks, Brian. What do you think, Professor Alban?
I think that's true. I think there's a defensiveness about the administration, and I don't blame them. I would feel the same way. But it seems to me that some of what we're seeing the Republicans do is they are copying the tactics used by Democrats in previous administrations. We've seen sort of a role reversal here. Even in the case of big government, and that's the other problem that's going on here is the criticism has gone on for a long time about Obama expanding the role of government and creating big government. This IRS scandal is part of that, and now the AP with the government possibly overreaching plays into that scenario too. So it's just very strange. This came up in what I kind of call a political perfect storm,
mm-hmm.
because you had the problem with the scope of the investigation, you had the context of the IRS overstepping, you have the age of terrorism, you have the age of cyber threats, you have Obama promising for many years to be more open than previous administrations.
Transparent president, yeah.
And then you have the Republicans trying to make leaks show that the president is not strong. Then you have Benghazi with a type of cover-up allegations going on. And then you have the criticism of Holder that really reached a peak when they wanted to try some of the Guantanamo defendants in New York City. So all of these things seem to be coming into play with this latest AP.
And of all of those stories, which one is most deeply concerning to you, Professor Allen?
I don't know how I can really separate them. I mean, the age of terrorism is here. It seems that it's not going away. The age of cyber threats gets worse and worse and worse. I can't scan my computer often enough now.
Mm-hmm. But when you look at the big three of this week, Benghazi and the AP, when you look at those three stories, which one is most alarming?
A lot of people say that the catalyst behind the Benghazi uproar is trying to defuse Hillary Clinton mm-hmm. from running for president next time. So I chalk that up to a lot of politics.
Mm-hmm.
The IRS is disturbing, yes. However, I'm not sure that whole story has come out.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, as a taxpayer, that the IRS should be vigilant in policing who can take advantage of a loophole and who can't.
Mm-hmm.
But it walks a very fine line of overstepping there. So that's a problem. So for me, and I mean, having been a journalist and teach journalism and teach journalism ethics, and this is a fabulous example for my students, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure.
I tend to think the AP one is very disturbing, but my mind may change tomorrow if I see where they have put limits on this that are enforceable limits to constrain this. I won't see this as bigger problem, but again, I come back to the word uncertainty. The uncertainty makes it seem bigger than it probably is.
I guess this part of the show, Professor Edward Allwood, he's a professor of journalism in the School of Communication at Quinnipiac University and worked as a TV reporter at all levels, including CNN. we're talking this. I know there are a lot of issues on the table right now, but we're looking at the AP and the apparent government overreach for records of some phone calls of some 100 AP reporters and editors, concern about a leak on a story of a foil of a terrorist bomb on an airplane story from last May. But we don't know a whole lot about why that was of such deep concern to the Department of Justice, because people aren't talking. Eric Holder will be answering questions before a House Judiciary Committee. That's going to be quite a grilling, I'm sure, today at noon. Two more of your phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, the author of Present Shock, When Everything Happens Now, Douglas Rushkoff, will be joining us. It's a great book. Let's go to Jim and Galena, our next caller. Hi, Jim.
Hello, my name is Jim, and I'm amazed at what I'm hearing and what's going on. When you consider how many Republicans that the president appointed to his pretty high post in his government, what amazes me most is hearing all this talk about, we're going to have hearings about this. While the president was being inaugurated, the Republicans were having a meeting. They were having a meeting at the same time, talking about what they could do to stop his administration. Now, meanwhile, we talk about, and I'm sure the Democrats are just as guilty in times past, but in the last 8 years with George Bush, they supported him to the tooth after 9/11, to the tooth. And he goes off and attacks the wrong country. I think it's about time we have a meeting on that, and maybe him put his paintbrushes down and come back to Washington to answer some questions. Because meanwhile, the last two Democratic presidents are out there helping the world.
Aren't there any of those stories that concern you this week, the AP story, the income tax story, perhaps Benghazi? Do any of those concern you, Jim?
They concern me, but Benghazi is getting Hillary. It's simple as that.
Uh-huh.
And I think that if Hillary made a mistake there, it's a man's life and a very good man's life. It concerns me. But what concerns me now is the president will totally cooperate with the Republicans if they'll come in and do it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the call. You do have to throw in, and politics is involved in all of these stories, isn't it, Professor Allwood? So,
well, it is.
Yeah.
My book, Dark Days in the Newsroom, was about McCarthyism aimed at the press, which, of course, was another form of intimidation, just as these subpoenas are a form of intimidation.
Yes.
And I'd like to read you two brief quotes from two newsmen who were called before one of the committees. It wasn't HUAC, but it was one of the Senate committees.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reporters said, "This subcommittee is nudging the end of my copy pencil. It is peeking over my shoulder as I work. The subcommittee is engendering the fear that soon it will be looking in the newsrooms all over the country." Hmm. Another of the reporters said, "The sacrosanct principle of the First Amendment was not adopted in order to favor newspapermen and to make them privileged characters. It was adopted because a free society cannot exist without a free press." And I think both of those quotes apply to today. It's echoing in many of the things the journalists are saying in response to these subpoenas.
Right. Let's just take one more comment. We're almost out of time. Rocky in Ishkoru, if you can make it brief.
Yeah, this is Rocky. Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Rocky. We're almost out of time.
Okay, I just have a kind of a question. Now, if you were to commit murder, would you be allowed to investigate your own murder? If so, then I guess my question wouldn't be of any use, but why is the government allowed to investigate themselves and we're supposed to believe it?
All right. Thanks very much, Rocky, for the call. We have to end on that note. Professor Allwood, thank you very much.
And thank you, listeners.
Yeah, I'd be interested in talking to you about that McCarthy book down the road. It sounds fascinating.
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay, good. We'll be in touch, sir.
Thank you.
Edward Allwood, professor of journalism at the School of Communication, Quinnipiac University. He has a long time career in TV reporting, TV news reporter in Virginia, Washington, D.C., and CNN. He's the author of a number of books, and we thank Rhonda Fanning for producing this program. Thanks for your calls, and thanks for listening.